to intervene to get rid of the Assad regime and have some influence on the opposition that would ultimately take power if it succeeds. But I think, in fact, given that the regime is as strong as it is and the opposition is as divided as it is, and some of the opposition being absolute anathema to Western countries, it's likely that this will simply help the fighting to go on and destroy more of Syria in the process.
As talks approach to determine the European Union's recognition of the Syrian opposition, EU foreign ministers have urged the Syrian National Council to uphold human rights. This is British Foreign Secretary William Hague.
I've urged him once again to make very clear the commitment of the National Coalition to all the things the Assad regime is not committed to human rights, to international humanitarian law, to democracy and freedom for the people of Syria. And I believe they will do that clearly at the Marrakesh meeting.
The implications of the EU, Charles Glass, potentially recognizing the Syrian National Council as the official opposition in its Marrakesh meeting?
I think you mean the Syrian National Coalition, of which the Syrian National Council is a small part. The Syrian National Coalition has been recognized by much of the groups that call themselves the Friends of Syria, including the United States. This is meant to be an umbrella group that embraces just about everyone. However, the fighting forces on the ground refused to recognize it from the day that it was announced in Qatar. So it's not having much influence on the ground. It's going to be seen, I assume, as another exile group without strong roots in the country, which often happens when the West decides to use people to intervene in third world country.
In your interviews that you did in Syria, one of the people you spoke to who allowed you to use his name is Zaidun al-Zawabi, professor at the Arab European University in Damascus. Talk about his assessment of the situation today.
Well, he and many of his colleagues who were at the forefront of the peaceful demonstrations at the beginning of the rebellion in 2011 are in despair at the way the opposition has become purely violent, and that those who were willing to risk being tortured and arrested and having their families arrested and being shot at in the streets, willing to risk all that against a regime that is so powerfully armed that it could not be easily defeated without bringing destruction to the entire country. So they still try to have peaceful demonstrations, which the regime controls and puts down, but they're not. They see that their tactics have become irrelevant because what is going on now is a civil war in which neither side is winning, in which the great majority of the population is suffering to no benefit.
And the U.S. talking about chemical weapons that Bashar al-Assad could use, warning him not to. What do you make of this being raised? Do you think this is a real threat?
I think it's pretty clear that the Syrians have never used chemical weapons, that there's no advantage to them to use chemical weapons. The areas where there is fighting are areas where people who support them are living, and their own soldiers would themselves be vulnerable to inhaling chemical gases. There's absolutely no advantage to the regime to do it. It sounds to me pretty much like the propaganda that was used prior to the invasion of Iraq, where the chemical weapons were held up as an excuse to bring about Western intervention, ultimately, when it wasn't true.
Do you think President Bashar al-Assad will ultimately step down?
I think whether it happens peacefully through transition, I mean, if there can be discussions sponsored by the United States and Russia to bring about a peaceful transition that would allow him to save face and step down at the end of his term in 2014, that would be a positive outcome for the country. Or he may be overthrown sooner through violence. Ultimately, I suspect that he won't be able to survive.
Charles Glass, I want to thank you very much for being with us from Britain, former ABC News chief, Middle East correspondent. His piece in the New York Review of Books will link to Aleppo, How Syria is Being Destroyed. That does it for our show. Special thanks to Democracy Now!'s Mike Briffer, Nafel Zahramati, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Al-Khafani, Masood Rabi, Karen, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Bob Longman here with the WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, December 11th. Jeremiah Birnbaum, Miss Tess and the Talkbacks, and the Tres Amigos will be in the On Your Radar series at the Living Room in Manhattan, 7 p.m. Ski's Open Heart Foundation Toy Drive, featuring Alejandro Abi Escato from TKA, will be taking place at the Kansas City Roadhouse in Patchogue at 7 p.m. Rook Annabelle will be at the Living Room in Manhattan at 11 p.m. And Frindle will be appearing at 8 p.m. at the West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Wednesday, December 12th. The Five Towns Holiday Concert with the Chamber Orchestra, Choir, and Vocal Jazz Ensemble will be taking place at the Dix Hills Performing Arts Center in Dix Hills at 7:30. Blackmore's Night at the Concert Hall at the New York Society for Ethical Culture in Manhattan at 8 p.m. A Sephardic Music Festival featuring Zion Edie, Yakar Rhythms, and Micah Kearney will be taking place at the Le Poisson Rouge in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Your concert billboard for Thursday, December 13th. The Irish Tenors will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury at 8 p.m. Travis McKeveny at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 8 p.m. How High the Moon, celebrating Les Paul, will be taking place at Five Towns College Dix Hills Performing Arts Center in Dix Hills, 7:30. Jason Crosby will be at the Living Room in Manhattan, 9 p.m. The Rascals will be at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester, New York at 8 p.m. County Line, Southbound, and Whiskey Road will be at the Emporium in Patchogue. Jennifer Knapp and Margaret Becker will be at the Sable Congregational Church, Sayville, at 8 p.m. A look ahead to Friday, Katie Perlman will be at the Grounds and Sounds in Stony Brook, 8 p.m. Ronnie Spector's Christmas Party will be taking place at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. And 45 RPM, A Very Cheesy Christmas, will be taking place at K.J. Farrell's in Belmore, 10 p.m. That's your concert billboard for the middle of this week. Keep listening to WUSB 90.1 FM and WUSB.FM, Stony Brook, to find out what's happening in the music scene around here, both big events and small. Have a happy holiday.
Bob, thank you very much. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. My name is Finn, and it is now 6:02 in the p.m. on Tuesday, and that can only mean one thing.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Again, I am not here this week, but we are going to be playing something that was recorded last year. This is actually something that took place right after Kyle and I had photographed up at Menwith Hill, which is a massive NSA surveillance outpost in northern England. We had one hell of an adventure, though, on the way up there, and as we join the action today, we're on our way back to Manchester and are recounting some of what went on earlier in the day. Let's listen.
You know, I should probably put the lights on. Hold on, that's over here, isn't it?
Yep.
There we go.
Lights on.
Bye-bye, neighborhood. This is quite a time we had here.
Really?
A series of times we've had here.
You want to try panning the audio to separate our voices?
Hold on, I can't. I gotta be over there, right? I'm making the right from there.
Yeah, so you gotta be on the left side.
Right, okay. This just confuses me still.
All right, before we start recording, do you want to pan or not?
Your call again. I don't know. Whatever you feel better.
So I'm gonna put you on the right and me on the left.
That's gonna be confusing, so I'm driving on the left, but okay, fine.
Okay. Now, you're sure you can fix this later, because it's really odd. I'm in the left ear, and you're in the right ear.
Yeah, of course I can fix it. I can merge them both into one, make it mono. I can raise you or lower me, whatever. I can do all kinds of things.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we got it. I'm going to take the headphones off and have a conversation. Cool. We haven't talked on the radio in a while. We should do some audio.
I agree. It's just a shame that we haven't set it up so we can do that.
Oh no! Wait, no, we've got stuff right here, E.
You do?
Yeah, but no, we got this equipment. So I guess
I'm just so caught up in driving. I'm on the wrong side of the road again.
Right.
And I don't know what you have going on over there. I'm too terrified to look away from the road.
Yeah.
So if you've got like a setup for audio, I think we should record something for the radio.
Yeah. 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 And you know, people want to hear what we've been doing. It's like wild. So I'm ready when you are. We can have a conversation. I don't even know where to start. We got to fill people in. Well, what are we doing now?
Well, right now I am driving. Oh, hold on. Is that a cop? No, that's a car. Okay.
There is a camera there. One of the big yellow ones.
Yeah. What's the speed limit? They don't tell you that.
Oh, I see 50 on the other side,
40,
but of course it's after the dang camera.
I'm doing 40, so I think I'm all
right. Right.
Yeah, we're in England, driving a car. Heading towards Manchester. And we just came from Menwith Hill. That sounds like a band from the 80s, but it's not. It's an NSA listening post, right? It's NSA?
It's fabled to be an NSA listening post.
The whole echelon thing and all kinds of craziness. Well, I mean, that's one thing. We went over there to take some pictures for next year's calendar with the theme of surveillance. And, you know, if you want surveillance, you better come to England.
Right.
But we sure have had adventures along the way. Well, we just had one huge adventure today getting up there. I don't know where to begin. How would you like to start the story of what we did today?
Oh, crud. So
well, a lot of it circled around you, so maybe you should frame this.
Well, I think we've talked about this in the past. Basically, I lost something today. I lost my cell phone. We drove out of Manchester and we made a stop at one of those aforementioned traffic cameras.
Yes.
They're all over here in England. So we found one that was in decent sunlight, and we were trying to get to Menwith like early afternoon to get some good lighting for that. But we figured we could stop and get a picture of this speed camera.
We drove out of Manchester, heading northward, I guess, to Menwith Hill.
Correct.
And we saw... We had seen these yesterday when we drove from Sheffield to Manchester, a few of the big yellow speed cameras.
Uh-huh.
And they warn you first. They're supposed to warn you that there's a speed camera ahead, which I guess makes people not speed. So we saw that one of those was coming up, and we decided that, hey, this would be a good picture to take. If you see in the... hold on, in the traffic circle?
Yeah, you want to go straight through this.
That's a traffic light.
Yeah, it's a light.
Yeah, no, I'm going to stop because it's a red light.
Yeah.
But if you see... A big yellow traffic camera in the 2013 calendar, the hacker calendar, that is the traffic camera that we had the adventure at involving Kyle's cell phone.
Yeah.
So I've set that up for you nicely. Now, what have we went on into the street? Busy highway. Well, not a highway so much. Two-lane road.
It's a two-lane kind of sub-highway, almost a highway, baby highway, but it's fast.
Highways. They don't have many highways here at all.
Yeah. And we were pulling off, and we pulled the equipment out, and it was hot, and midday, you know, like I said, we were trying to get there in the early afternoon, so this is a long way. We're about halfway to our destination, and then we pulled over, and I got all the bags out. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was a bit disheveled, and I hadn't kind of emptied my pockets and gotten into the photography mode kind of thing, and ended up, you know, having my phone, or you know, having personal belongings mixed in with what I needed to do to take a picture. Anyway, so I was fiddling around with all the camera stuff. It really was a fact of, like, or matter of having this clip, this, like, belt clip phone holder. I guess it spun upside down.
Well,
and
I think you're giving away too much too early, because keep in mind, the whole day was pretty much spent wondering what happened to your phone.
True,
We were driving afterwards, and you're looking around for your phone, and probably, you know, your phone's got to be here somewhere.
We'd been using it. We'd been using it right before we stopped. We'd been using it to get driving directions. Mm-hmm. I'd entered in the postal code. We'd been using it. I had it when we stopped, and we just want to pop out, get a picture of one of these speed cameras. They're all over the place. They're really iconic, and we. So I took a couple cameras, and we were basically on either side of the road. There's another speed camera. Those are much
That's
smaller.
A different kind of
yeah,
speed
totally
camera.
Different. Anyway, I had a little bit of fun with this large format camera I brought. Did some film stuff, a nice field, and then I got sort of an across the street shot of the speed camera. And then I was on the same side of the street as the speed camera because I wanted sort of a straight on perspective. Although it was a bit dark because the sun was behind it, so to get the front of it, it wasn't very well illuminated. I'd also been on the same side of the street as the camera and shot something from behind. So I had like three different perspectives, and I wanted to cover it as best I could. And we were actually, we hadn't seen very many of them, so it was an important stop. So when I was on the same side of the street as the camera, I was just sort of crouching down, doing all kinds of things over there. And we sort of wrapped things up, and I'd gotten, you know, some really decent shots on the digital camera. And then we sort of hopped in the car and made our way sort of to Menwith Hill. And we got pretty far. We got almost to
not that far, maybe 5 miles.
Yeah, a couple miles down the road.
Hang on, what do I do here? It's in that traffic circle.
You want to go Manchester A56 M66?
I'm sorry, I cut that person off, didn't I?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is right.
A56?
I think.
Well, it's gonna be A56. So we went the wrong way again.
Yeah, we went the wrong way.
And the guy cut off is right behind me, so that doesn't help.
God, I'm terrible at this. These.
You have a streak going of I think, four traffic circles in a row that have sent us in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I'm bad at traffic. Well, I'm usually good at traffic circles, but these are going the wrong way.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of issues I'm having with this car. But, you know, we'll just turn around, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm good at that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you noticed pretty much right away that something, your phone wasn't where it should be.
Right.
And I think we both have that talent of knowing when something's missing.
Right.
But I couldn't figure out how could your phone be missing. It's got to be in the car somewhere.
Okay, get off here.
That's why I have the signal.
Wait, it says Manchester if you go straight. So
well,
maybe
this probably
connects
to
it.
This road goes to Manchester, so it knows a different
Let's
Manchester.
Just stay on it and keep it. Yeah. Well, anyway, speaking of turning around, we got so far and then turned around because we needed it. I was using it for directions, right? So, you know, it was sort of important.
For communicating with people, like telephones.
That too, absolutely.
But I still was convinced that it had to be somewhere in your bags or something.
And I looked.
Sense.
I looked, E. I really did.
Yeah, I know. So did I. We both looked.
Yeah.
And we turned around, went back, and looked some more. And we basically started walking around where you were taking pictures.
Now, there's an obvious thing people do. They call their phones, but in this instance, we had turned around.
Outsmarted yourself on this one.
A little bit. Yeah. I had arranged some international data, a little international text. In the process, managed to get some help forwarding my phone to an American number. Now, basically, what that's all about is the people, from my understanding, from what I was told, that if I had any incoming calls, I would have to incur international charges. And I really didn't want to do that, so I figured the best thing I could do is just forward it to my home phone number and just get any calls on voicemail. That way, any incoming calls to that particular phone wouldn't actually ring it and go to my voicemail. And outgoing calls I wasn't going to do. We've got SIMs in other phones for any kind of outgoing local stuff we want to do, or even international. The SIMs are so cheap, right?
We've got our own British phones. Each of us has two different phones.
Yeah.
One an American phone, one a British phone.
Yes.
And what you were trying to avoid being charged every time somebody called you.
Right.
And you didn't pick up, it goes to voicemail, but they charge you for an international call to transfer it to voicemail, which is stupid.
Yep.
That does happen. So you thought you were doing the right thing, but what happened was, when you did that, okay, your phone forwards to a number back home in America.
Right.
But that also means when you call your phone, it doesn't ring. It rings back home, but that doesn't help you find your damn phone, which is somewhere.
And that's really useful. People, when they lose their phones on their couches, they do this all the time. So yeah. that avenue of search was out of the question. And here we are. We're still trying to get to our destination to do the shoot at Menwith Hill. So we've doubled back, you know, done 10 extra miles just to get there and start digging through. And what was going on is the grass. I was in, like, a couple different areas, but the grass on the side of the road was really tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just grass. There's some thorny stuff and nettles. Stinging nettles.
Stinging nettles.
And at the time, I mean, I've been wearing tall boots and long pants, so I didn't really think of that at the time. And I didn't think anything was going to fall off me or that we had lost it. And I still wasn't sure that was the case, that it had fallen off me or anything like that. I thought maybe I put it on top of the car. I was convinced I had this thought that I had put it, I didn't put it back in its holder, and that's why the holder was empty, because I had put it in some other pocket in some camera bag. But that was a delusion, complete delusion. So anyway, here I am in the car. I had searched everything, and that's why we had doubled back, because looking through the bags and you know, I just had an empty holder on my hip, and then so we do this search because we knew it wasn't in the car. We knew it was in the bag. We'd torn things apart, and so now we're digging through grass and stuff and sweeping, kind of going back and forth either side of the street.
I was trying, because your phone couldn't ring, I was trying to send you a text message because, you know, you can send a text message at least, but your phone only makes one noise, very quick noise.
Yeah, it goes beep.
Yeah, it goes beep. And
something like that.
You know, so I was sending a text message saying, where are you, to your phone? And basically moving a few feet every time we did that to see if maybe I'd hear that beep. And I must have sent about 20 of those. And we'll talk about how much that costs later.
Well, actually, I have, I think, 50 SMS messages as part of the package. So
well, that's lovely, but my phone doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, I had to do that from my phone.
Okay.
Regardless, we didn't hear the beep anywhere, so we still didn't know. I mean, we thought that one of the theories was that the phone was left on top of the roof of the car, and that we drove off, and it went flying into the highway, and immediately got destroyed.
Yeah.
Am I going straight here?
Go straight.
Okay.
That's wrong, though.
I shouldn't do it. I can turn.
I think I'm 5 for 5,
well,
right?
That wasn't really your fault. You want to see Blackburn, we're on our way
just
there.
Just turn around.
I don't understand. Why there's
okay,
some...
but slow down and stop. Like, turn around.
I'm going to slow down and do all kinds of things, but I'm curious.
Okay,
you know?
Right here.
Let me ask the question.
Shaw Street. Just
I don't care what
turn around,
called.
Back in, whatever. Let's, right. None of this driving 5 miles.
Like,
I mean,
built to 1500 places.
Whoa.
So, yeah, why do some cities have... it says, you know, this many miles to this city, this many miles to this city. Some of that is in parentheses. I don't know why. Sometimes it's right there without parentheses. Sometimes it's in parentheses. There's some code going on here. The whole highway system is really weird because it's not really highways. It's just a bunch of small roads. The numbers keep changing on the roads. So you can't just, like, take the A45 or whatever to a city. But the A45 turns into the A46 and all kinds of other things. And it just makes it a lot of fun. So here I am, turning around and try and go back. And
yeah, so we got to get that roundabout back there.
I'm on the right side of the road.
This is a bit of back drive anyway, so...
in a medieval, like, customer neighborhood here. This guy's facing past him.
Okay. You want to go right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
I will get that. I have to remember the right side.
So you were really dedicated. I was like, I felt horrible. I felt like an idiot. I had no idea what had happened. I had all these stories running through my mind about what happened to this device. And you were like on your knee, you're digging around, crawling through all these nettles. And I'm kicking things around in the boots. We were getting really sort of at our wit's end. And I at one point went and talked to one of these ladies. I gave her some one of the ladies around and gave her some contact info.
What ladies?
Well, one of the women. There's some house and some
people who lived in the neighborhood.
Yeah, okay. The neighbors. Yeah, long story long. I talked to them. There was another guy that pulled up, and he was speaking with you about you know, if we could get out of the way.
Being in his parking space, yeah, for one thing. But they were all very patient, very nice, and they were helping us look in the grass.
Which was really nice.
I think you even gave your number to one of the ladies that took an interest.
Email and number. I exchanged contact info. I was sort of walked up to
you
her.
Have her contact info?
No.
That's not exchanging contact info, is it?
That's a interesting distinction.
Well, it's giving your contact info, but you have no way of telling her to stop looking because, okay, yeah, you did find the phone.
Yeah, she may wonder for the rest of her days what.
Well, she might be out there tomorrow morning with a whole, like, troop of people.
Oh, Lord.
The British are like that. They really, they take on the project.
Well, I did feel like they were understanding and didn't really look hostily at us as we were, you know, on the side of the road.
No, just curious.
Yeah, fretting over this stuff. Yeah.
So we stayed there for, what, a good half hour or so?
Right.
Just crawling around.
Right.
Looking for the damn thing or trying to figure out where we could have gone or how it could have possibly left our possession. I still thought in the back of my mind, it's got to be in the car somewhere.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I had gone through bags. I was just really befuddled by the whole thing. And basically, we were running out of time. We needed to get to Menwith so that we had a bit of dusk left.
As if this wasn't enough, we needed to get to, like, the most ominous-looking place in Britain.
Yeah.
With a million surveillance antennas of all sorts.
Yeah.
And supposedly, if you're caught taking pictures, you can get in a lot of trouble. So we had that to look forward to while looking for your missing phone.
Right.
And wondering how we were going to fit that into the day.
Yeah, and I was actually really stressed out about the shoot because we are going to this base. It's basically a Royal Air Force base that is, you know, contracted out of the U.S. military to run the thing. And there's a lot of suspicions, a lot of controversy around the place, and people don't really know, and it's basically, you know, a bit scary. And to go there and do some of your own surveillance as a citizen or a photographer, it was a bit nerve-wracking for me. I didn't quite know how to approach it. And then so having the anxiety, stress of losing this device, and then we had to kind of give up. I just said, we got to stop. You're getting stung by nettles up to your elbows. Can't find it.
I'll always remember this. The scars on my hands, I can look back on this day and say, wow, I remember that. Clear as a bell.
Right.
You know? You need those things. You really
right.
do.
But it sort of made me feel worse. I didn't want you, like, it was like on the verge of martyrdom, E. I was really concerned that you were taking one for this stupid phone.
I wanted to find the damn thing. I wanted it to be over, you know?
To
move on with our lives and get arrested up at Menwith Hill.
Right. Right. Sure.
That's a lot to me.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the gist of it, I guess. We,
I don't understand this road here. Okay.
Yeah. It was like rumble strips.
Well, it's split into two.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did that. I guess that's for a truck or something.
I don't know.
We're 17 miles from Manchester, which means it'll take us about an hour. That's what it does. It takes so long.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's something we've noticed is they're a lot smaller, they're windier, and
I have a theory. I told you this theory that cities are relatively close together. Like Manchester and Liverpool, I think, are about 40 miles away from each other. Yet there is all this difference, different accents, different culture, different everything.
Right.
And in the States, that's like a half-hour drive. But here, it literally will take you a couple of hours just to traverse that distance because the roads are narrow, they aren't really highways, there's all kinds of traffic circles, and it's not really a direct route. So it takes you longer to get there, so you feel like you've gone further.
Right.
Or maybe in our case, we feel like we haven't traveled far when we have traveled far. We just, we're sort of immune to distance now. But here, it still means something when you travel 40 miles, so much so that there is a different accent and different customs and different ways of looking at people.
Totally.
And, yeah, so
It's kind of like the highway stopping in your neighborhood with, like, a roundabout. Then it continues on to the next neighborhood.
But England is like a sort of a microcosm because it's relatively small.
Sure.
But all these places are far away, even though they seem to be close to us. So it's very bizarre. managed to keep this for centuries.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a bit of a crash course. You want to stay in the straight ahead lane,
okay,
I believe.
Okay, well, I didn't know the lane was changing. The trucks were blocking the...
I can't believe you believe me.
Well, was I supposed to do this or not?
No, I'm just kidding.
Back to the phone. So,
sorry.
I guess that ended in failure because we were crawling around and looked at the thing. We couldn't find it, couldn't hear the chirp or anything like that. And we were theorizing at that point that, in fact, you had left it on top of the car. And then we started driving down the road looking for remnants of a BlackBerry in the road.
On the curb or something like that. And mind you, I was really frustrated because I don't want to have to get a new phone. I don't want to have to get the contract. None of that. I don't want to renew any of that. It's all this hassle, and I might lose my unlimited data. They're doing all kinds of horrible things with that and phones these days. And mainly, it works fine. I can dial a number. I can talk to another human being. That's what a phone is for. I like that, and I don't want to have to be, you know, forced into a bunch of garbage, you know, saying it's lost or making some sort of stolen claim. Who knows? I mean, and we really were curious what the heck happened. So here I am, sticking my head out the window on our way to Menwith Hill.
You look like a dog.
A little.
Sticking your head out the window, like panting a little bit.
You said it was adorable.
Well, it was cute at first, but, you know, once we started going through town and stuff, it just started pointing and sort of lost its thrill.
Right.
So we went to the point where we stopped the first time when you realized you didn't have your phone. Obviously, we couldn't have dropped it beyond that point.
Yep.
Didn't see anything.
Yeah.
So we just proceeded to Menwith Hill and took pictures there.
Yeah, and just try to put it out of our minds. And there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of deep breaths were taken and trying to take stock. I was... a bit, losing it a bit. I was really freaked out with the whole thing. It just was too much.
I had to remind you that we've had at least two adventures like this in the past. One in Iceland where you left your hat.
Yes.
You left your hat in Iceland in an airport terminal.
Correct.
And somehow we were able to get that hat back. In fact, we didn't know where you left the hat. It could have been in France. Could have been in Iceland. Could have been on an airplane.
Yeah.
We didn't know where it was. We were calling all these different places, but somehow the Icelandic police tracked down your hat and sent it back to us.
Yep.
So if we can find a hat in Iceland from New York, I think we can find a phone. And the other instance was when you left your camera.
My camera? I left the whole camera bag.
Yeah, the camera bag with all kinds of things in, what was it, Drummondville?
Drummondville in Canada.
Yeah, in Quebec. And you didn't realize that until we got to Toronto.
Yeah.
Where's my bag? And we knew that your bag had been left at this, we suspected it had been left at this cafe. And fortunately, you had told me earlier in the day that you collected business cards of places because you like to send them spam. Was that the way you phrased it? Or?
Well, no. I was involved in some fundraising for a charity and stuff like that. And I was a bit sarcastic about it. Well, not sarcastic. I just like to load it up. I mean, I had to load it up with email addresses anyway. So I would sort of add extra ones, people that took my money for other reasons. I figured, why not get a nice for me to learn about all the things I do for charity or whatnot. And so I expressed this to you, and you basically, for whatever reason, it was in your mind when we were in that cafe. You easily could have not done it at all, but you collected this card and had given it to me, so we knew exactly where it was, and that's how we found the bag.
If you had not told me the story, I wouldn't have given you the card,
right?
And perhaps you wouldn't have taken the card. So fortunately, we had the card. We knew the name of the place, because imagine in Toronto trying to figure out what's the name of that place we stopped at back in Drummondville in Quebec. But fortunately, we were able to answer that. You were able to call the person from the car at the cafe. Spoke very little English, but were able to ascertain it. Yes, in fact, there was a camera bag left in that cafe that day, and the odds were that it was yours.
Right.
So we knew it was safe at least.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We drove back and got it. So that's two instances where we lost something and got it back. So I knew somehow we were going to get this back.
Yeah.
Unlikely as it may seem. First, I was trying to figure out how we lost it in the first place. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It didn't add up.
Yeah.
And then later you told me the story about how your carrying case was upside down. So, okay,
right.
That might explain how it could have fallen out.
And I didn't hear anything. That was another clue. There were little clues along the way, but I was still torn. Like,
did
maybe it was on...
so it must have fallen on grass, yes.
Something soft, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just a lot of process of elimination and just trying to think rationally about it when I was already really anxious about this shoot and a bit stressed. I mean, I don't know. We rewind it. We've got a couple days here. We've packed a lot in. A couple days here where we've been under a lot of stress.
It's only day four.
Yeah.
We've done so much.
I mean, just yesterday we can go into greater detail, but we narrowly made it just out here at all. We may not have had the opportunity to lose this phone and go to Menwith because of nearly missing a train.
Yeah.
Whole other story for another time, I think. But
we crossed London onto a train. We had 5 minutes to spare.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I got into the train station, I couldn't even find the tracks.
Yeah.
That's how desperate I was. And then when we got to the place in Sheffield, we were renting a car.
Correct.
We couldn't find the place that rented the car, and they were closing in a few minutes, and their address on their website had a street, but it didn't have a number.
Yeah.
And I called their number, and all I got was a recording saying there's no one available to take a call now, and they hung up. And it's just insane. It's like they didn't want us to find them.
Right.
We almost didn't. Then we got there just at the last possible minute.
A couple minutes. Yeah, I mean, it's just, we've been just like by the skin of our teeth on a lot of these connections, just trying to make it, and oh, the agony. But anyway, so it's...
We can skip over the whole taking pictures at Menwith Park, because, well, we took pictures, and... Yeah, we basically got good pictures, and hopefully they made it to the 2013 Hacker Calendar.
Yeah,
Along with the traffic camera. I kept thinking throughout this whole escapade that this is how surveillance gets its last laugh on us, by taking away our technology while we take pictures of them.
Yeah.
You know, somehow the phone is missing. We don't know how, but it just disappeared.
Well, here's my spook theory, attitude. Basically, it was a good cover that my phone was lost, so that anybody tracking my phone would think that, you know, I was back there wherever it was lost. But
except we had three other phones.
It's kind of stupid. It's a bit pie in the sky. But anyway, you do a lot of crazy things that make yourself feel better in those instances. But I don't know. It was.
Then I lost my sunglasses. Sitting in the car, like, what kind of black hole is in this car that things just disappear?
Right.
But I found it in the back on the floor. It got there somehow, so that theory went out the window.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But basically, we took pictures of Menwith Hill, and off the road because I'm trying to figure out which way Manchester is.
You, as I was huffing and puffing on the way, were saying, look, you know, don't call it in lost. Don't freak out now. You're out of control. I was saying that. I feel out of control right now. This is just crazy. All the things we're doing. I'm really stressed out. And now this, I have like my communications medium is just completely in the wind. And I was just so frustrated. But you were dead on and just listening to my agonizing and huffing and puffing. But also saying, look, we'll get to this. Let's do the shoot, let's change modes, let's talk about that and plan that. Yeah, it's out of control. And I kind of had to listen at a certain point and stop being crazy about it. Because being crazy, you're basically at a loss of power and ineffectual. So, and you had a couple good ideas in the process, and I was listening, you know? And basically, I'd shot myself in the foot with the forwarding, so that was sort of out. The texting wasn't really very effective when we were there. But you had said, you know what, let's contact some people, see if some friends can get us the number, because I have a number for some international customer service for the provider I use. And basically you said, you know what, just call back, get it re-forwarded, and we'll come back when it's darker, maybe it'll light up, and when there's less traffic, so it's not as noisy.
And
you know, through my own, yeah, exactly, you'd hear it, it'd be audible with less cars, and perhaps even see it light up. And I kind of had to hear you through my own BS, and I kind of relaxed. I said, okay, well, you know what? We'll deal with it later. And, you know, we have to get this photo in, so we then focused on that. We got out to Menwith, and we had a fair amount of adventure out there, and then basically planned to stop through on the way back. So, I don't know. Basically, after the shoot, we continued back. We stopped in Skipton,
something like that. Yeah.
I believe we stopped in Skipton, which is a bit of a like a medieval town. They've got this enormous castle and stuff.
They're all medieval towns. They really are. It's unbelievable.
Right. And I was able to make the phone call. I got the forwarding changed immediately. and avoided reporting it. I was really tempted because, again, all these thoughts had gone through my mind. I was done with the, you know, the shoot, so I was less anxious about authority and this whole listening post thing. A little bit more relaxed, I could focus on the whole thing. We got it forwarded back and made our way back to the site where we had been digging, literally going through blade of grass by blade of grass.
Well, hang on, in that town, though, you succeeded in getting them to unforward your phone.
Right, and I was very tempted to report it lost or stolen, but you're like, no, we got to give it a try, giving it a call.
Yeah, so we called it after they unforwarded it. It rang a bunch of times. So that
That was the test.
That told me that your phone was not destroyed on the highway because it would have gone straight to voicemail probably.
Totally.
It didn't exist anymore. It was ringing, so that's a good sign. Nobody picked up. That's a bad sign. But it also pointed to it being there someplace.
Still, perhaps, on the side of the road, which we...
And I couldn't figure it out because I literally felt every inch with my hand.
You were on
my scarred hand.
Crawling around. I don't know what we're going to do. We got to find some Benadryl, some kind of antihistamine cream to put on your arms.
I don't think that's necessary because I'll probably have to have them amputated. But then there's good in that because I'll be able to get prosthetic limbs. We've been talking about that for some reason every day.
Yes.
How prosthetic limbs are the future. And everybody seems to be able to become superhuman.
So you'll have robotic phalanges.
Yeah.
To do more searching for other lost things.
Can I just say another thing?
Yes,
too?
Go ahead.
We were watching some television in London.
Yeah.
And one of the children's programs in the morning, we're just going through Teletubbies and various other things.
Totally.
One program where this woman is just, you know, saying, "Hi, kids," and, you know, "Welcome."
She's like the co-host, yeah.
Whatever this program is. And then she stands up and you realize she doesn't have a stump for an arm. And it's like, wow, that's just, she's hosting a kid's show. No explanation whatsoever. She has one arm and one stump. And, you know, in the States, I mean, obviously from the tone of my voice, that's a bit of a shock. Weren't expecting that. And here in the UK, apparently, that's just, yeah, that's part of life. Sometimes that happens. And kids learn about that. And I think I screwed up.
Yeah, city center's
well,
that way,
you know,
but we're,
it
whatever.
Only gave me that much notice. Okay, A663. I have to go over there somewhere.
We want to be on the north side of town.
You don't want to be on the south side of town, eh?
Yeah, you don't want to be the south of Manchester.
That's where the Gallagher's hang out. All right,
oh,
fine.
Boy.
So, do I go up there, or what would you suggest?
Well, I don't know, Ring Road, Oldham, that looks kind
Oldham
of...
Oldham is a different city, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, is it?
Well,
okay.
I would imagine so, it's a different name.
All right, okay. So we're going to go by the airport. Okay.
Yeah,
Oldham.
Like heading towards the airport, unless there's another way.
Ring Road, try that.
I don't know how to try that. It's just not the time.
Okay.
Anyway, so this woman had a stump for an arm, and she was hosting a kid show. I thought it was awesome that people are involved like that and not judged.
I would get off here.
That, making a left here?
Yeah. Oh, man.
It was not that
good
easy.
Good luck. Okay,
yeah,
that's out of the question.
Too many cars here.
Great.
And
yeah.
People drive like maniacs here, too.
Man.
I mean, I know I have to get used to different rules and things like that. That's another thing. When you rent a car... They just hand you the keys. They don't tell you, by the way, make sure you drive on the other side of the road, you being from the States and all. You know, they don't say that. And I think that's rather a major thing to be aware of. Obviously, it's, you know, you'll know pretty quickly, but, I mean, just think about it. If you had to get in your car tomorrow and the steering wheel's on the right-hand side and you had to drive on the left-hand side,
uh-huh.
You might have a little bit of a problem with that, you know? It might take some getting used to. There's no course you have to pass. There's no training of any sort. They just put you in the car and away you go. And it's not really that hard, I guess, you know. I mean, you've driven for the first time now.
Trial by fire.
On the left side, yeah. It wasn't so bad, was it?
No. I got used to it pretty quick. It's bizarre, and it can wear you out, but it's not bad.
Uh-huh.
So I really want to encourage you to get off and turn around.
I'm trying to do that. I just have to get into the left lane, which is the slow lane.
Uh-huh.
Then I'll get off the road and go the other way.
Yeah.
Hopefully that works. I mean, it should work because we're going to the airport now, apparently. So if we turn around and go away from the airport, there'll be signs pointing to the city that
right.
belongs to the airport. So,
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
Well, there's got to be... I should be...
First. All right.
I'm gonna...
I'll go first, then, if you're not going to go first. You're doing
You're
not even saying words. I'm gonna turn around.
All right, just please exit.
I'm trying to
go
exit.
Go to Sport City.
There has to be an exit for me to exit.
Tameside tourist attractions. All right, well, anyway, there's got to be a story behind that woman with the missing limb. You think
maybe
it was a birth defect?
Might have been a birth defect. The point is that there are people like that, and they should be a part of society as much as anybody. And
absolutely.
Not be gawked at and talked about as we're doing, but that's our culture. You see, you have to realize that things are different in America than they are here.
Yeah.
People have a much better sense of humor, I think, and a much better way of dealing with things.
Yeah.
That's not to say they're not screwed up in other ways. But let's avoid that for now. Let's get back to the phone. So.
No. Driving.
Oh, okay. Still on driving.
Well, no, good. What were you want to talk about the phone?
Well, we didn't talk about how we found it eventually.
Oh, you're right. We got to finish that.
Manchester is
a right.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, that worked.
It's a light here, too, by the way.
So I should stop at the red light ahead. Thanks for telling me this.
Well,
you're full of helpful
we were
hints.
Talking about how confusing driving can be in other countries. And you
I'm
know.
Also I'm also using a stick shift, right, which
yeah.
makes it, and I don't really like this stick shift. I'm having some issues with it.
Yeah, you're fighting with
Look,
it.
Look, it's the moon.
Left, right?
Why would I go left?
What is your plan?
To go down this road that said Manchester this way.
Okay.
Right? Didn't it say Manchester to the right?
All right.
Did I do something wrong?
I don't.
Well, you seem to know something because...
Oh, no, it says straight. A635.
Why are you filling my head with doubt like this?
I don't know. I'm on my last leg here.
Occasionally, I get something right, and whenever I do, you point me in a different direction so I get it wrong when I would have gotten it right, and that would be the one time I got something right. You know, it's going to assist that you give me to get it wrong. I get the credit for getting it wrong, but you have a hand in it.
Looks like we're out of time for this week, but we're going to pick up again next week right where we left off and see just where this conversation goes, and we'll find out if we ever make it back to Manchester. That's next week on Off the Wall.
Voices! What do you want of me? Voices! Which way do I turn? Voices! You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook, the longtime home of Stony Brook Athletics. My name is Andy Mai. I will be in the WUSB studios giving you score updates. But today, we're going to be sending you down to Brooklyn, where Stony Brook men's basketball will be taking on St. Francis. So let's send it back, send it down there to Brooklyn with Mike Solano and Kirk Olson.
All right, Andy Mai, thanks very much. Welcome once again to Stony Brook University basketball here on WUSB, where, as Andy mentioned, tonight it's St. Francis Brooklyn hosting the Seawolves as Stony Brook looks for its best start in its Division I history. And returning, Kirk, to the place where it all began, the first game for the Seawolves at the Division I level back in 1999 came against St. Francis. A long way the Seawolves have come in the 12, 13 years since then, and a good one should be on tap tonight as the Seawolves look for a 7-2 start.
Absolutely, Mike. Remember that well. It took place in the Broome County Arena up in Binghamton back then, and next game for the Seawolves was Marshall. So the Seawolves haven't played since then against St. Francis, and they're looking to avenge and right the scales. In that, and they'll have a tough matchup tonight.
Yeah, meanwhile, it feels like the Seawolves haven't played since 1999. 10 days off for this team since a win against Eastern Illinois. You and I didn't get to see that game. We were with the football team at Montana State, so it's been a while since we had a chance to watch the Seawolves with our own eyes, and for that matter, a long time for anybody to get their Seawolves basketball fix. 10 days off for this team as it comes in 6-2, had a lot of momentum, had a good showing against UConn, had the big wins against Cornell and Eastern Illinois. Really took care of business in both of those contests as well. So the Seawolves feeling good about themselves. 10 days off, a chance either to get healthy or get cold. What do you think Steve Peichel has his team ready for tonight?
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest point of concern for Coach Peichel, was just that long layoff, because he felt like, hey, I had this team on a pretty good roll up till then. I mean, they beat a tough Canisius team, a team that still their only loss is to the Seawolves. And then, of course, they played very, very well against UConn and kept it rolling throughout. So he felt like he had a good thing rolling, and then all of a sudden you grind to a halt. Now, on the upside, it gave some guys that were a little banged up a chance to get fresh legs. You know, even a guy like David Coley. You know, every once in a while, the knee flares up, and so rest, when he gets an opportunity to get it, is very beneficial for him. But it's kind of like baseball, pitching or hitting. Basketball is such a fine sport in terms of skill set being on or off, that long layoff, sometimes it takes you a while to get into rhythm. And against this St. Francis of Brooklyn team, they're very athletic. They're that classic undersized New York City team that's got a ton of athleticism, would love to turn this game into a pickup game, as Steve Peichel likes to say, and they've got some terrific athletes and one particularly good shooter who can make that a nightmare for the Seawolves.
Well, Seawolves have been in a couple of games like that already this season and have tended to fare well in those games. Think about Ryder, Canisius, opponents like that. St. Francis, in some regards, fitting that mold. But we had a chance to talk with the head coach of the Seawolves, Steve Peichel, a little bit earlier this evening. Let's get the coach's thoughts as we head into tonight's matchup.
I'm not.
there is the head coach of the Seawolves, Steve Pikul, as we are just about 7.5 minutes away from the start of tonight's contest. The Seawolves, as Coach mentioned, coming into this one, 6-2 overall. St. Francis Brooklyn with just about an opposite record. They are just 2-5 on the year, but have played some tough games. Only one home game so far this year. That was a loss to Army. They've gone to Illinois. They've been at Lafayette, Brown, Albany, Boston College, their most recent game over the weekend. So as Coach mentioned, Kurt, difficult schedule for the St. Francis Brooklyn team, a team that's been pegged to finish right in the middle of the pack in the NEC this year, has overachieved somewhat the last couple of seasons under Ken Bryken in his third season as the head coach. But this is a team that has a lot of confidence in itself and has turned some heads the last couple of seasons. So not going to be an easy matchup here on their home floor as they look to get a win against the Seawolves.
Now, I mean, they want to come and show out at their home, you know, their home date here in Brooklyn. I mean, obviously, I kind of alluded to it. I'm excited to be back in Brooklyn. We drove around as coming in, you know, coming into the city, and there's just always a different energy level in the city, and city teams tend to have that little, you know, what they call a swag about them, and this team is trying to show a little swag on their home floor, and they haven't been here, so they're looking to really get their crowd into it. They're excited to be here. You could tell, I mean, hey, warming up, there were some spectacular dunks that they were showing. They showed their athleticism in this game. And I think what Steve Pikul hopes for is a fast start by the offense that'll be buoyed by the defense. If he can get the defense to really lock up, and his big thing were the matchups. Right now, what will happen to begin this game, he is really worried about getting Tommy Brenton or Jameel Warney in foul trouble. So what he's done is he's put Eric McAllister to guard their leading scorer, Jalen Cannon, because Cannon is that undersized four that can step out, he can shoot a three, he can beat you off the dribble, he can post up, but he's not going to be that traditional dump it into the post power player. They've also put David Coley on Ben Mockford, the three-point specialist on this team, and they've basically said to Dave Coley, go out and do your best Darrell Revis impersonation. We're going to put you out there on an island, not really any help, because this St. Francis team is so athletic that they want to be able to crash the boards and rebound and not allow St. Francis to get second opportunities, because if they start to rebound and really run and gun and get run outs, that's the kind of game that they're going to be energized by. So the Seawolves, hedging their bet early on, going to really try and pack it in, collapse everything, clear the boards, play outstanding defense, and then say, hey, you got a guy who can knock it down from three. We got a guy we feel we can put out there and guard you in space.
It'll be a bit of a homecoming of sorts for Dave Coley. He'll take on the Englishman, Ben Mockford, playing for the Brooklyn team. And as you said, Mockford, a three-point specialist. 19 of his 28 makes on the season have been from long distance, just about two-thirds by that measure of his field goals have been from behind the line. And then you have Jalen Cannon as well, seventh in the nation in field goal percentage, shooting a shade below 65% for the year. He also leads the NEC in rebounds, averaging 9.7 per game, and his 16.3 points per game average is tops on the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to be in Brooklyn. I went to high school about 10 blocks down here. Dave Coley, a Thomas Jefferson guy, all the way across the borough. You've got, as you mentioned, Ben Mockford. He's that, like the Sting song, the Englishman in New York. It's exciting, you know, and we haven't seen basketball in 10 days or so, so we're excited to call the action. But this is going to be a tough game. You know, when you look at the record, as a fan, you think 2-5, they're not very good. This team, as you said, picked to finish in the middle of the pack in the NEC. Well, there's some pretty tough teams in the NEC, and they are. I think they're ready to play tonight. The big question is, are the Seawolves?
Yeah, not a lot of size, as you said, on the St. Francis team, but they're all about the same size. 6'5", 6'6", a lot of length and athleticism on the team. We talked about the two leading scorers. They've got another couple of guys 6.5 feet tall, and Kevin Douglas and Akeem Johnson in the starting lineup, who are also averaging double figures per year. And this is a team, much like the Seawolves, that likes to get guys into the mix. So we've seen a lot of teams this year, Connecticut being one of them, that only will play 7, 8, maybe a ninth guy will come out there. St. Francis gets some guys into the mix as well to keep them fresh and play that fast, up-tempo style of basketball.
Yeah, where they can be had is they can be goaded into taking the bad shot. They do have those guys that are undersized fours, fives, who can take threes and sometimes are guilty of falling in love with threes. And what you hope is that the Seawolves can play that great deny defense, guard access to the lane, keep St. Francis as a perimeter team, make them settle for shots. Hopefully you get a few off-balance or ill-advised ones, and then you get out there and run your offense. The other key is getting to the free throw line, drawing fouls for the Seawolves, utilizing the presence of a Tommy Brenton, of a Jameel Warney. St. Francis is not a good free throw shooting team. As a team, they shoot about 59%, perhaps 60%. And even Cannon, as their leading scorer, is about 65%. So their best guy at drawing fouls isn't terrifically proficient at making his free throws, and other guys really don't get there a lot. So those are the things to watch. I think the big key to this game, both teams' defense, but particularly Seawolves.
And Seawolves coaching staff making its way out onto its bench. Referees are on the floor as well. We're a little less than 90 seconds away from the horn sounding. Team heading up for the national anthem as the Seawolves get set to take on St. Francis Brooklyn. Not St. Francis NY anymore. They go by St. Francis Brooklyn. They've still got the Terriers moniker, however, but just another sign that Brooklyn's back, baby.
Exactly. They got to capitalize on the rising popularity of our borough here. A lot of good things going down in Brooklyn right now, and hopefully the Seawolves hope that they can bring a little Long Island flavor to the city and show them what Strong Island is all about in Brooklyn.
There's another basketball game going on in Brooklyn tonight about a couple miles from here over at the Barclays.
Not even, about a mile and a half.
Yeah,
man.
That should be a good one. And, of course, we'll only add to the traffic as he tries to leave later on, but certainly a lot of energy and just walking over the couple blocks from the train, a lot of people out and about and rush hour traffic. So a busy night, as always, in Brooklyn here in the Heights, and the Seawolves and St. Francis set to tip off as the teams lining up across their respective free throw lines for the Star Spangled Banner.
Look at Mike talking about the height.
Poser, maybe.
No,
on the end of my thing.
You're a Brooklynite. You got a little flavor.
I got the honorary badge. Excellent. And we'll get to the public address system as we get set for our national anthem. Let's go courtside. Star-Spangled Banner here at St. Francis Brooklyn as the Seawolves and Terriers get set to tip things off. Let's take a look at the starting lineups for tonight's contest. First, for host St. Francis, in the backcourt is Brent Jones. Not a bad tight end in his day, but these days playing guard for the Terriers, who I almost called the Nets that time. Ben Mockford, meanwhile, at 6'2". We talked about him, the guard out of Shoreham-by-the-Sea, England. He is the three-point leader on this team. We talked about his prowess from behind the arc. Just a 33.3 percentage from three-point range, but takes a lot of attempts and a lot of makes as a result. Bit of a volume shooter in that regard. Certainly not afraid to pop it. Up front, the trifecta, so to speak, of 6'5", 6'6", forward, with Jalen Cannon leading the way, 16 points a game on average for the sophomore from Allentown, PA. Akeem Johnson, the senior up front, along with Kevin Douglas, a sophomore. Akeem Johnson from Brooklyn, Douglas out of the Bronx, both also averaging double figures scoring. Meanwhile, for the Seawolves, the backcourt tandem once again of Anthony Jackson and Dave Coley, the Brooklyn native. Jackson and Coley, the two leading scorers on the Seawolves, with Jackson coming in averaging 13.5 points per contest, Coley at 11.5. At the three spot, Tommy Brenton for the Seawolves, averaging over 8.5, or just about 8.5 rebounds per game. Brenton at 6'5", the senior. He's joined up front by 6'8". Hightown, New Jersey native Eric McAllister, and in the middle, the stud freshman Jameel Warney, coming in averaging 11 points per contest, 7.8 rebounds a game. He has been better than advertised for the Seawolves, but again, with all the athleticism but not much size, it's not going to be that physical game the Seawolves going to have to watch out for, Kurt, but those guys, Warney, Brenton, making those adjustments to the speed, trying to stay out of foul trouble in this one, keeping that front court strong, keeping that size advantage on the floor.
Right. I mean, St. Francis wants to make you play in space defensively and then try to put a move on you, and Jameel Warney, well, he's not used to that. He is a classic post offensive player and defender. Tommy Brenton can handle that, but what you don't want to do if you're Steve Michael is sort of expose him unnecessarily to the risk of foul trouble because of the value he has to you everywhere else. So you try to give him a little easier assignment. So the two guys really on the spot for the Seawolves to start this game, David Coley guarding Mockford, really can't make him be anything but a three-point shooter. And then I think the toughest job defensively, Eric McAllister guarding a very, very accomplished scorer in Cannon.
We'll see how those matchups work out, as McAllister waiting on the Terrier logo at center court as St. Francis stays in the tunnel for an extra couple of seconds, getting set for just its second home game of the year. They played Army back in November, lost that game to the Black Knights 67-59, and last win for this St. Francis team coming in overtime on the 24th of November against Brown. Three straight losses since then, no wins in just about half a month, so this team very hungry coming in.
Interestingly, when McAllister goes to the bench, you'll see Anthony Mayo guard him, and you'll say, well, Mayo's a classic four. He's a little more experienced, understands how to move his feet, play a little bit better in space defensively.
And McAllister easily able to win the opening tip against Akeem Johnson. Here's Dave Coley driving in for the Seawolves. Kick out pass to Tommy Brenton. Spots up for three just off center to the right, and they'll wheel it around the perimeter into the hands of Coley on the left wing. Finding Warney up high into the hands of Jackson. Jackson pulls up just inside the arc. Knocks down a long two-pointer to get the Seawolves on the board 28 seconds into the game. So Jackson not showing any rust from the 10-day layoff, as here's St. Francis wearing the home whites with double blue piping trim down the sides. Seawolves wearing their road reds, the red, white, and gray trim on the shorts, the white numbering and letters. With it, Kevin Douglas drives and pulls up at the elbow, puts up a jumper, and hits that one. So an impressive shot there from Douglas to answer the one from Jackson in traffic. Minute in, we're tied at two.
And there you see a guy who's a three or a stretch four.
There's a good pass inside from Warney, finding McAllister in the low post. Puts one up off the left side of the window. It won't go for him. Rebounded by St. Francis. Up ahead comes Brent Jones. He'll handle high on the right side. Picked up by Jackson. Rolls one in to the right side post. Down there, spinning with it. Putting up the shot is Johnson. He can't get that to go. And Brenton underneath for the board.
Coley in his attempt to rebound that almost tipped it in.
Brenton to the left side of the lane, throws one up off the glass. The rebound is deflected out of bounds. Last touch by Jalen Cannon. It will stay with the Seawolves underneath. 18:29 left to go here in the first half, tied at two. Just underway here on WUSB. Seawolves and St. Francis Brooklyn. Inbounds pass near baseline from McAllister to Jackson. To the crest of the arc for Brenton. He'll drive in one-on-one and is fouled on the way up by Kevin Douglas, who is following him step for step. As Brenton went up, Douglas got him with the body, and Tommy Brenton earns a trip to the line. First foul of the game.
And nice move by Brenton there to just simply head fake his guy again. This is when you don't play somebody regularly. People don't know Tommy Brenton's game. Gets you to move. A lot of ball fakes, head fakes, gets a guy up in the air, and then just attacks the rim.
First free throw from Brenton is good. Tommy, on the season, shooting 67% from the line. Now a smidge better than that. Second one up, and that one off the back iron, no good. Rebounded by Douglas. They'll get it into the hands of Jones, who will jog it across the timeline. Jones takes it to the right side, just off the free throw line for Johnson. Around back to Jones, picked up by Jackson. Bounce pass, 10 feet from the basket. Here comes Cannon, back down McAllister. Spin jumper from the baseline, no good. A little bit short, and Warney underneath with the rebound for Stony Brook. Ahead to Anthony Jackson. Jones gets him on the right wing. Screen set by Warney. Jackson picks up his dribble, reverses direction to McAllister. Over to Brendan. Fakes the three. Now dribbles in. Pulls up on the elbow. Delivers the pass down low to Warney. Can't get his lay-in to go, but has his own rebound. Up with it again, and that one finishes. So Jameel Warney gets another crack at it. Gets on the scoreboard. And the Seawolves have a 5-2 lead 2.5 minutes into the game.
Well, great movement without the basketball for Warney to get free. Missed the chippy from the left side of the layup, but such a big body, Mike, and great position, able to recover, and then put back.
Johnson straight away, far from the three-point line, works it around to the right side, now gets it back in the low post, has it poked away by Warney. Jackson got a hand on it as well, and Brenton comes up with the loose ball. Dishes back to Jackson in the front court, around to Coley. Coley to the right side, slices his way to the elbow, finds McAllister back outside to Brenton on the left wing with 22 to shoot. Brenton will try a three. That one rims around, no good. McAllister got a fingertip on the rebound, and it goes out of bounds. It will belong to St. Francis. And the first substitution of the game as Alex Isailovic from Belgrade, Serbia, checks in. Jones into the offensive half court, pulls up high right side. Gets hounded by Jackson as he dribbles left, surveying the terrain. Looking inside, backs out to the high left corner, just in front of our broadcast position. Jones still with the dribble, finds Cannon, bounce pass inside Johnson. Long turnaround hook, no good off the glass. McAllister was down there as well. Here's Jackson with the rebound and the basketball. Over to McAllister, around to Coley. Coley on the far sideline. Telegraph the pass to Brenton. That one was picked off by Isailovic. He drives in, gets the foul on Brenton and the basket. So the telegraph pass from Dave Coley, picked off by Isailovic, and the serve goes down the floor. Not only gets the basket, but draws the foul against Brenton as well, who was trying to get the charge.
Yeah, more than anything, just a lazy, nonchalant pass, Mike. And then the and one, Brenton really trying to get back, take the charge, but the feet moving just a little bit. And so St. Francis gets a bucket off a turnover.
Matt Milk, Jr. from Wausau, checks into the basketball game for St. Francis as Isailovic's free throw is halfway down, bounces back out. So Seawolves maintain the lead 5-4, 16-15 and counting left to go in half number one. Jackson crosses midcourt, dribbles to the left side, along the sideline, puts his back to the basket, passes to the top of the arc for McAllister, around to Brenton. Brenton looking inside for Warney, but it's well defended down low by Milk. Forced to back out as Brenton to the high right corner. Draws Isailovic out, now pulls up at the elbow. Nice pass down low. McAllister there to flush it down. As Brenton left his feet, drew the attention to him. McAllister left unchecked. And an easy finish for Eric.
It's not classic drive and kick, but it's classic Tommy Brenton drive and dish.
Milk saves a bad pass from going over the baseline. Finds Jones, who floats one up in the paint and gets it to drop. 4.5 minutes played, 7-6 Seawolves lead. Jackson again across midcourt. Jones has him right there. Hard pass flung over to Coley. Gets a screen from McAllister on the left side. Now tries the right edge. Coley has the ball poked away and it dribbles over the baseline. Last touched by St. Francis. And so we'll stay with the Seawolves on the other side of the official timeout. Let's check in with Andy back in the WUSB studios. 15-14 to go first half here in Brooklyn. It's the Seawolves 7, St. Francis 6 on your longtime home for Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Back in the WUSB studios, let's get a check of the America East basketball scores. Right now, we have three games going on in America East. Right now, Binghamton is at Michigan, and Michigan is leading 8-5.
Boston University at Harvard, leading them 8-5. And, of course, we have Stony Brook leading St. Francis 7-6. Also, we have down Atlantic Avenue, about a mile away from where the guys are. We will, the Knicks will be playing the Nets at Barclays Center for the second time. But now, let's send back to Brooklyn.
All right, Andy, thanks very much. Back here in Brooklyn at the Pope Physical Education Center at St. Francis, Brooklyn. 7 Seawolves with 15-14 remaining in the first half, and both teams spreading it around in the early going. 6 field goals, 6 different scorers. Seawolves, Kurt, with the early edge in the rebounding column, 6-3 over undersized St. Francis.
Yeah, that's a good number for them. Also, the pace and the action is kind of going the way the Seawolves would like it. It's under control. It's not helter-skelter. Coley, fortunate there, didn't get the ball stolen. Got to be careful of dribbling in traffic.
Inbound pass. Jackson finds Brenton, who hands back to Jackson, who spots up and knocks down a near-corner three. On the set play, Seawolves extend the lead to 4. Here comes St. Francis going right to left, and an easy drive and finish for Cannon.
And that's the key. He makes it look easy. He's such an accomplished scorer.
John Bracey getting set to check in for the Seawolves as Jackson takes it right wing, feeds Marcus Rouse fresh onto the floor for Stony Brook. Rouse, hard pass, wheeled around to Brenton. Brenton drives baseline. He's fouled on the way up as he went for the jam. So Brenton earns his second trip to the free throw line, comes with 14:40 to go in the first half. And the foul called on Matt Milk is his first and the team's second.
And see, that's the deceptiveness of a Tommy Brenton, because if you haven't seen him, he kind of plays that sort of herky-jerky, pull you to sleep game, and then all of a sudden he's exploding past you on the baseline, looking to jam it home with 2.
Brenton went 1-for-2 last trip. This time this is the first off to the left as Bracey checks in. Kevin Douglas back in for St. Francis, relieving Alex Isilovich.
And so now with the substitution, Tommy Brenton will switch over and now guard Cannon for a while.
Brenton's second free throw is good, so he makes 1-of-2 once again. He's got 2 points, and the Seawolves have a 3-point lead, 11-8. 5.5 minutes into the ballgame. Douglas passes between the circles for Jones, around to the far side of the floor. Rockford had it briefly, gets it back to Jones, who takes it back near the court logo. Little bump from Jackson, screen set by Cannon. Jones takes it into the lane, now kicks out Douglas. Long three on the way, knocks it down from professional range to tie the score.
But you'll take that, because the Seawolves denied multiple times entry into the lane, and that was just a blowout three, and that was, as you mentioned, from close to NBA range.
Yeah, practically from our broadcast position. Entry pass there from Bracey, intended for Warney, is deflected out of bounds. And that last touch by St. Francis, so stays with the Seawolves near baseline. And will be inbounded by Anthony Jackson. Seawolves set up, inbound to Brenton. Brenton waits, fakes the handoff this time to Jackson. Dribbles it himself around the arc. Brenton pulls up, high right side. Draws attention to him in the form of Douglas. Cross-court pass into the hands of Rouse. Back around it comes from Brenton to Bracey. Bracey right side, 4 seconds to shoot. Rouse has it just inside the arc, has to launch one, and off the front of the rim, no good. Rebounded off a couple caroms by St. Francis. In with it, Jones going end-to-end. Kick out Douglas around top of the arc. Three ball on the way, rims around, and no good from Travis Nichols. The senior from Brooklyn, fresh onto the floor, takes his first attempt. Brenton left all alone, drives in at the other end, and then feeds the pass across the paint to Warney for an easy slam.
What a connection those two have. Again, all predicated on Brenton driving the lane.
St. Francis' defense simply fell asleep that time. They all anticipated a kick-out pass from Brenton, which never came, and it was like the Red Sea parting for Tommy Brenton. He had a pretty much a two-on-one from the top of the lane on down with Warney. Meanwhile, Terriers make one at the other end, so 13 all. Here's 3 on the way from Bracey, over everything, no good. Seawolves get it back, though, on the offensive rebound. Warney going up with it, and he is fouled out of the way. So Seawolves get set to make wholesale changes. 3 players getting set to check in at the scorer's table. Foul on St. Francis, the Terriers' third.
And the second on Matt
personal,
Milk.
Yep, going against Milk is his second, as Kurt said.
Well, Bracy shot the air ball from the right baseline, and the St. Francis player thought it was going to go out of bounds. Well, he actually thought it was going to hit the rim. When it didn't, he was too close to the sideline trying to save it in. You always throw it to midcourt. Instead, he threw it under the basket, and there was Warney to capitalize and get the putback opportunity.
And Warney makes his first free throw. Comes into the game shooting 63% for the year at the line. Second on the way. That one off the back iron, no good. And caroms out to Jones. Outlet pass to Douglas. All alone in a Hammerhawk jam with one hand. And he soars back on defense.
Well, Steve Peichel was urging his guys, run, 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 back on the defensive end. But they're able to answer with a little running of their own.
Yeah,
Trey Purifoy penetrating and dishing.
A little Brooklyn ball right here as Purifoy feeding Warney for a slam. 16-15 Seawolves, 12-11 and counting left to go first half. As Jones settles things down, calls the play, dribbles to the right side. Hands off there to Douglas. Feeds it around, top of the arc, and comes to the left side for Nichols. Into the hands of Mockford, has it poked away by Rouse, but a foul is called. And Rouse didn't like that call. He gets called for his first personal, and the Seawolves' second team foul brings us to a timeout on the floor, so we step aside as well. 11:58 left to go in half number one. It's the Seawolves 16, St. Francis Brooklyn 15 on your longtime home for Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Back in the WUSB studios, let's get you caught up on some America East basketball scores. Right now, we have Binghamton at Michigan, and Michigan is leading 13-10. Boston at Harvard, Boston University at Harvard, they are tied at 10. The Lake in Pro Bowl, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Cavaliers are tied at 12. And in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, the Nets are leading the Knicks 10-3. Let's send it back down to Brooklyn.
All right, Andy, thanks very much. Back here at St. Francis, it is 16-15 in favor of the Seawolves. Jameel Warney with an early 7 points for the Seawolves. 7 points as well for Kevin Douglas, who's 3-for-3 from the field thus far. Kerr made a three-pointer a few moments ago from our laps. And the game picking up in tempo. Not a bad time for the Seawolves for that official timeout to come. We talked a lot about the pacing of this game, and in the last couple minutes we saw the tomahawk slam from Douglas at one end, followed by the nifty dish from Purifoy across to Warney for a slam dunk. So pace starting to pick up there, and the Seawolves will try to settle things down here as St. Francis takes it back on offense.
Absolutely, but as Steve Peichel really got into his guys on the bench, particularly defensively, Jay Young as well. Don't want to make it that track meet we talked about.
And Douglas with an ugly three-pointer right there. A little overconfident that time. Shot it over everything from the right wing. Bulls come away with it. And now foul called away from the ball. As Purifoy was dribbling on Anthony Mayo, who was locked up with Akeem Johnson.
By the way, Tommy Brenton with his second rebound so far has tied the all-time mark at Stony Brook for rebounding with 9.05. So with his next rebound, it'll be 9.06. History will be made. He'll surpass a Brooklyn guy, Steve Simon, as the all-time leading rebounder at Stony Brook University.
Fitting setting there as Nichols takes it to the paint, but gets called for the travel as he tried to spot up for a jumper. So turned back over to the Seawolves as Scott King checks out. Tommy Brenton back in for the Seawolves as pursues that record-breaking rebound. Seawolves into the offensive half court. Going from left to right here in the first half. Purifoy with it, high left side. One arms a pass across the floor to Bracy, who feeds Rouse. Now back around the arc it goes, and Purifoy on the left. Inside to Brenton. Brenton about 12 feet from the basket, kicks out to Purifoy, gets a screen from Mayo, puts one up from straight on. Long two, no good off the back rim. Rebounded by Johnson, hands off to Jones, who runs it into the offensive half court for St. Francis. Now Jones, one dribble, puts it up, and it is swatted away by Anthony Mayo. Big rejection there from Mayo. will stay with St. Francis. 10:51 left on the first half clock.
Well, that's what the Seawolves try to do. They try to herd you away from attacking the middle of the lane. You have to come down one side or the other, and then there's typically a help defender. And the element at this time last year that is so different, Mike, is that they had six blocks up till this point in all the games played last year. This year, they've got three guys with six blocks apiece at least.
They add another emphatic one to Mayo's column a moment ago. Meanwhile, as St. Francis tries to go over this, Johnson got the miss, so Cannon kept the play alive. It comes back into the hands of Johnson, who puts it in for his first points of the night and puts St. Francis in front. Meanwhile, Purifoy trying to answer and does at the other end with an 18-footer.
You see what's playing well offensively. Each bucket, especially difficult ones by St. Francis Brooklyn, have been answered.
Ilasovich launches a three from the far corner. That's no good. Brenton with it for the Seawolves.
And there is the record-breaking rebound right there.
The 9:06 as Bracy, beg your pardon, drives in. Pulls up from 10 and floats one up and drops home.
You know, this is a guy who's been unsung, I think, for most of the season, Mike. You and I have watched him. He has not sort of dominated the ball with his ball handling the way he did last year. He's been very unselfish. He's really worked hard on the defensive end and the glass and has been an X factor in games without really a lot of tangible statistics.
Down low, ripped out of Johnson's hands, last touched by the Seawolves. We'll stay with St. Francis as Warney and Coley
get back in.
Well, they got together, yep.
Good teamwork right there. The official on the sideline had a better view, went over, they got together, got the right call.
And so it will be Seawolves basketball with a three-point lead. 9:32 remaining in the first half. Five on the floor for Stony Brook. Tommy Brenton, Trey Purifoy, Jameel Warney, Ron Bracy, and Dave Coley. Purifoy over to Bracy on the left side. Foul line extended. Pass to the top of the arc for Brenton. Around to Coley on the right side. Takes it down the sideline. Pulls up his defender's ankles and passes back around to Purifoy. And into the left corner it comes for Bracy. Back up top Coley. He'll try an NBA three. That hit!
Last year, off the crossover, it would have been a pull-up jumper. But Dave Coley is a little more patient. Or 2 years ago, I should say, a little more patient over the last 2 years, and then got himself a wide-open three from deep and knocks it down.
Dre Calloway on the floor for St. Francis, running the point in relief of Jones. Calloway has it between the circles, and Purifoy steps out on him. 12 to shoot, hard pass into the lane to P.J. Centivenier. Had it knocked away, but it comes back to Calloway. Calloway, 6 feet out, throws one up that goes over the backboard and out of play. As Purifoy got taken out on that one. A lot of contact, no whistle either way, but the errant shot by Santavenir sails over the backboard, and it belongs back in the Seawolves' hands with 8:30 left to play in half number one.
And there again, the benefit of the presence of a shot blocker. Even when they don't block shots, they alter them.
Brenton tries the right side of the lane, tried to dish it across the paint at the last minute to Bracy, but the pass sails past him and out over the sideline of the far corner of the floor. And back to St. Francis it goes on the turnover. 23-17, Seawolves in front.
Well, going back to our football, we're not so far removed from it. That was like a quarterback trying to fit it into that tight window, the window a little bit too tight. Tight, Bracy cutting, but not really open. Ambitious by Brenton.
Cannon back into the game for St. Francis. Calls Calloway to him and gives him the pass. Calloway back near midcourt with 15 on the shot clock. Left 8 to go in the half. Screen set by Johnson. Pass bounced from Calloway to Johnson off his back heel. Comes to the Seawolves. Purifoy for Coley. Goes up and he's fouled as Coley tried to elevate. Not sure where that was going to end up for Dave Coley. he was closing in on the rim awfully fast. But he gets bailed out by the foul and will go to the line on the other side of the official timeout. The foul was on Jalen Cannon, his first, and St. Francis' fourth. We'll take a timeout on the floor as well.
It was the right idea, though, by Coley, attacking the rim all the way, and then you as the offensive player, so many times you get the benefit of the doubt. He did.
So let's send it back into the studios for an update. 7:50 left to go in the first half with the score Seawolves 23, St. Francis Brooklyn 17. You're listening to the longtime home of Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Back in the WUSB studios, let's get you caught up on some basketball scores. In the America East, we have number 3, Michigan, leading Binghamton 21-12.
Boston University and Harvard are tied at 17. The Cavaliers are leading the Lakers right now by the score of 19-16. And down the block from where the guys are, we have the Nets opening a large lead to the Knicks by the score of 21-7. Now let's send it back down to Brooklyn.
Andy, thanks very much. Well, the Nets with a football-like score lead over the Knicks in the early going. You've got something of a football score here, too, so far. 7:50 to go first half. 3:17. Stony Brook on top. 7 points still for Jameel Warney, leading the way for the Seawolves. And Kevin Douglas stuck on seven as well. Tommy Brenton, 3 rebounds to go along with 3 assists so far in the early going. And both teams shooting the ball well. Kurt, 56% for the Seawolves, 44.5% for St. Francis.
Right, but the Seawolves are definitely trending upward, as they say, because they were at 43% at the last break, and they've just gone on a tear, largely sparked by their defense and then transition opportunities. They've also gone to the line. This is their 7th free throw shot. Now, they're not shooting very well from there. It's only 3 of 7 as Coley misses the first. But in contrast, St. Francis has only gone to the line once. They're not putting St. Francis at the line.
Coley missed the first, second one, bounced around for a while, sat on the rim, but ultimately rolled true for Dave Coley. So the Seawolves lead extended to 7. Cannon with it over to Callaway on the right side, steps back, feet on the arc, around to Ilasovich. Over it comes to Santavanier on the near sideline, and back up top to Callaway with 15 to shoot. Callaway gets a screen from Cannon, picked up by Warney. Over to the far side for Ilasovich. He has his pass intended for Cannon, blocked out of bounds over the baseline, and so it will stay with St. Francis. 9 on the shot clock, 7:23 game clock, as McAllister checks back in for Stony Brook. Galloway to inbound, fires one up high for Ilasovich. 7 to shoot as the serve drives in, right side of the lane, throws one up underhanded, comes up short. Brenton comes away with the rebound. Brenton down the floor for the Seawolves, going end to end and a little out of control into the lane. He takes out Callaway and gets called for the charge, and that's Tommy's 2nd.
Well, you could see that Tommy wanted to find Anthony Jackson, who knows playing with Tommy, runs to the spot in the right baseline, but it was well defended. They anticipated that pass, cut it off. Tommy had to keep the ball. And then, as you mentioned, just being a little out of control, he'll have to go to the bench now after picking up his 2nd.
Just the 4th team foul for the